You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Christy Clark launched a comprehensive review of the province's justice system 2 months ago. She says her goal is to make sure it's more efficient and modern. But a new report prepared by the BC Civil Liberties Association says a business administration model won't help to fix what's broken in BC's justice system. Kevin Tilley wrote the report, Justice Denied. He's a Vancouver lawyer, and he joins me by phone this morning. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
I'm going to ask you to go through the problems with the criminal justice system in some detail, but first I want to ask you about a statement made by Christy Clark that government spending has gone up alongside decreasing crime levels. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. So crime levels in Canada have gone down, and that's a trend that's been going on for a number of decades, in fact. Spending, on the other hand, has in fact gone up, and there's a number of reasons for that. One of the main ones is that across Canada generally, the complexity of criminal cases has increased quite a lot. There's been a number of cases from the Supreme Court that have made new rules around evidence that have made that our cases are much more complex and taking a lot more time.
Now, I'm going to ask you to take us through some of the problems with the system through the eyes of a man accused of committing a crime, let's say an assault.
Okay.
How long would it take for his case to come to court?
Well, there's a number of questions in there. So the question is, does it go to trial? How does it resolve? There's a number of things that can happen in the criminal justice system that affect exactly how long a case takes. So traditionally, a person would be arrested and brought to court within 24 hours. There's a section of the code that requires that. They're brought to court for a bail hearing, and at that time, there's a really kind of critical juncture in deciding what happens with the case next, and that is, does a person get bail or not? And whether or not they do can really affect whether that person has a trial, whether they plead guilty, or exactly what happens with the case after that.
Where would he be while he was waiting for his court date, if in fact he didn't get bail?
Yeah, so if a person doesn't get bail, they're held in a provincial remand center. So it's a jail, and some of the people there will be serving short sentences, but the majority of them will be serving or waiting for the trial, so held on remand. They're provincial centers that are scattered around the region. There's fewer of them now than there were 10 years ago, but there's quite a few of them around. And they're holding people in fairly tight conditions. There's not a lot of programming. There's not a lot that goes on other than just sort of sitting and waiting for the next court date.
And in your report, did you find that was money well spent in terms of keeping people in a remand center?
Well, not really. So the cost of holding someone in a remand center before trial costs a lot more than it does to supervise that person in the community. So if we're given a choice as a society whether we want to hold people before trial either in the community and have robust systems of supervision, such as bail supervision officers or some kind of electronic monitoring, if that's one option on the one hand, or the other option of holding them in jail, there's no question that holding them in jail is a lot more expensive. And certainly from a liberty perspective, holding them in jail is a much more costly option as well.
Now, would this fictional person that we're talking about, would he have access to a lawyer?
Yeah, so a person is given access to a lawyer usually right away when they're arrested. Now, the difficulty is that nowadays there are fewer of these remand centers in the province, so typically a person is brought away from their community and away from their court to a farther distance away. And so that makes it a little more difficult for that person to meet with a lawyer in person. They can usually make a phone call to the lawyer's office whenever they want, but now with the travel distances, people moving farther away from their communities to be held in jail, it's a little bit more difficult for lawyers to access them in person.
Let's say this man was accused of assault, and he finally gets to court and is convicted, say, mm-hmm. and he's sentenced to jail time. What kind of conditions would he face in provincial jails?
Well, again, now that depends. If he's serving a sentence that's less than 2 years, in Canada that means he's held in a provincial center. So sometimes he could be held in the exact same institution that he was held before he was convicted, but in some cases he's brought to a proper reformatory. Now, these days, those reformatories are much more crowded than they were about 10 years ago. We're looking at some institutions that are now housing up to twice their intended capacity. The ratio of inmates to correctional officers has really gone up. About 10 years ago, that ratio was about 20 to 1. In some cases now, that ratio is up to 60 to 1. So we're looking at massive overcrowding in those institutions. And the result is that people are not getting the programming that they need for rehabilitative services. Conflicts between inmates are on the rise just as a result of the overcrowding. And certainly conflicts between officers and inmates has gone on the rise as well.
Now, what would happen if the person that we were talking about were also suffering from a mental illness? Would his trajectory be any different?
Yeah, so there's meant to be a number of mechanisms in the criminal code that deal with a person with mental illness. So when a person's first brought to court, the judge and the lawyers have some options available to them to figure out exactly what to do with that person. So they may be brought to a fitness hearing where they're assessed by a psychiatrist to determine whether the person is fit to stand trial. Even if they are, at the end of the day, there's a question of whether or not they're criminally responsible. So the person may be found not criminally responsible as a result of a mental disorder, in which case, rather than going to a jail, they would end up in a psychiatric institution and held there under the review board's jurisdiction. Now, the trouble is that in BC and many other jurisdictions, the resources for these kinds of programs is really not there. And so that means that when the person's brought to court the first time, they may have to wait quite a while before they're able to see a psychiatrist and get assessed. It may mean that at the end of the day, they just simply don't get that assessment and they end up going through the system without really getting the help and the treatment they need. And the end result then is that quite a few of the prisoners that are in our provincial jails are actually people with mental disorders. So a recent study, in fact, showed that something like 29% of all the inmates in our provincial jails are people with mental disorders. So it's quite a high number of people who really need help rather than incarceration. And our province is not doing a very good job of providing that help and moving people into the resources and the support that they really need.
So where does that problem lie exactly for the people with mental health? Is that a problem with the legal system? Is it a problem with the health system? Is it a problem with social supports? Where should we be addressing that problem rather than putting people with mental health issues in prisons?
Well, I guess there's a number of options. I think that the problem can be located in a couple of different places. I think the very first place to start is what happens on the street. So right now, if there's an incident, a crisis moment for someone with a mental disorder, often the police are called. Family or friends or people who are involved with that person will call the police because that's really the only option that we know. And perhaps we should look at other options. Is there other resources that people can call, rather than calling the police to deal with a mental health crisis? Should we have some kind of crisis nurses available to deal with these situations? In any event, when the police do come, the resources for them are really limited. So what does a police officer do with a person once they've come to a situation or dealing with a crisis situation? Traditionally, there isn't much available for that officer. They can bring them to the hospital, but unfortunately, usually the person just gets turned away or let go right away without real help down the road, meaning that officer typically will just charge the person and say, well, let the court sort it out.
Well, as we've kind of like walked through this scenario, the thing that sort of seems to come up over and over again is that there's a lack of money in the system, or there's a need for more money for things like supports for people with mental health, or for legal aid funding, for instance. So how do we square that with Christy Clark's statement and you've verified that spending's going up and crime's going down, yet we still have this incredible kind of gap in the system where there isn't funding so that people have a fair and just and a humane treatment in the system?
Well, I think we need to look at the big picture. So rather than just look at, what are we doing now and how can we do it cheaper, we need to look at questions like, if we invest strategically here or there, how will that affect the cost savings down the road? And there's a number of places where, yes, we need to spend more in certain areas, but that spending may actually save us more money in the long run. So a good example of that is legal aid. So right now, legal aid has been cut about 36% that it was in 2001. And that means that there are fewer people with lawyers going through the system. So you've got people that are unrepresented appearing before the courts. Those people take longer to go through the system. They're probably more likely to have a trial. They use up more resources as they go through the system as a result of the lack of legal aid funding. So that's a good example of where if we spend more up front in making the system work properly, we can actually save more money down the road in how the system works. There's a couple of examples of that. So what we're asking for is not simply more money in the system, but to invest strategically in areas that will actually save us more money down the long run and make the system work more efficiently.
So I guess the question that I kind of come away with this when I hear this is like, is... So you say we could be spending more money, spending money more strategically in different areas. Is it a management problem of we're not spending money in the right places, or is it a philosophical problem in terms of our approach to the legal system and how we see our legal system and how we think of people going through the legal system? Maybe that's too big a question, but that's the question that I've got.
Definitely a big question. I think it probably lies at a bit of both, but I think it probably is more of a philosophical question. I think it's really a question of how big picture are we looking here. I think that this government has had a traditionally looked at it somewhat with blinders on and saying, we're doing these jobs, how can we be more efficient about doing this job? And how can we find a way of accomplishing the same things with less money? And I think what's needed is a bigger picture view, looking at the system as a whole and saying, how can we deliver justice to the people of the province? How can we make the system work better? And where do we need to spend our money, and how do we need to make the system change to make it work better? And I think it's a question of scope more than it is maybe philosophical, and looking at things in the bigger picture and finding ways of spending our money that work better in the long run.
Well, thank you very much for joining me this morning and for taking us through it.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye, Kevin.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Vancouver lawyer Kevin Tilley. He produced the report Justice Denied for the BC Civil Liberties Association, and you can read that report at their website at bccla.org.